Welcome back to TV Campfire Podcast. This is podcast number 26, and I am Libya, your host. And this week we are doing a very special Doctor Who roundtable. And I have several guests with me this week, starting with...
Brian from Los Angeles.
Josh from Los Angeles.
Eddie from St. Louis.
Peter from Los Angeles.
Malcolm from Las Vegas.
And Allison from Los Angeles.
We talked over each other a little bit, but that's cool.
It happens.
It does happen. Let's just get the little bit of news we have out of the way, which is actually Doctor Who news. That next season, they're splitting up series 6 for some reason. I'm not quite sure why. But
so they can have two cliffhangers, basically.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah. I mean, the season isn't that long anyway. But basically, the news is we're going to get 7 episodes at the standard Doctor Who time, and then we have to sit through the summer with nothing, and then in the fall, we'll get the last 6. So I think it's a ratings ploy to get people excited about the show, which I kind of get.
And to sell more DVDs.
Yeah.
Oh, God. Are we going to have Doctor split? Who 6.0 and 6.5? Oh,
probably.
Oh,
but you know what? I don't mind that much. I'll just say this real quick. I don't mind that much because it gives us less time between Doctor Who stuff than waiting a whole year.
Yeah, but I like having my Doctor Who, I have it, and then it's done, and then I don't think about it, and then I get excited about Doctor Who when it comes again, versus the splitting.
I hate having something split in the middle, you know, with like an artificial cliffhanger stuck in there, you know, to get attention.
Yeah, my real worry is that the first half is going to end, like, as Moffat is saying, on this absolute screamer nail-biter of a cliffhanger, and then we have to wait like 3-4 months to find out what happens next.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't like that.
It worked okay for BSG, though. They kind of did something similar, so it kind of worked okay for
them. That was a year, though.
Yeah, we had to wait a year for that.
Yeah.
We're
not going to wait that long here, though. So,
but in charge of BSG, that was pure sci-fi.
Yeah, and I didn't like that. You say it worked. I didn't like it at all.
I didn't particularly like it. I didn't care for it, but then for me, at a certain point in time, BSG just became so much white noise, I didn't care anymore.
Oh, let's not get off track. We're talking
Doctor
Who.
So that's the Doctor Who news. Yeah. All
right. Let's start off. One thing is the last podcast we talked about Doctor Who was several months ago. And one thing we didn't do is talk about the finale, which was Pandorica Opens Part 1 and 2. Isn't that right?
It's
Pandorica Opens.
The Pandorica Opens and the Big Bang.
Oh, the Big Bang. Yeah. Right. Okay. Yes, the two-part finale. Who wants to open up the discussion with part one?
I thought it was great.
I liked it.
It really ratcheted up. It really ratcheted up the tension. It really gave us something to look forward to. The whole thing with the painting in the beginning and bringing back all those characters from earlier in the season and other seasons like River Song. That was great. I thought it really did a really nice build-up.
Yeah, and I thought that building all the way up to the end of it, with the Pandorica itself, I kind of liked the twist they gave. You didn't totally see it coming,
mm-hmm.
right. But at the same time, you sort of thought in the back of your mind, and it's probably the Doctor in there.
Actually, I didn't think it was the Doctor in there. I was like, what the heck could be in there that's so scary? Like, that was where I was coming from. And I agree with you. The teaser, where they literally, I think they showed like 4 or 5 characters that were brand new characters like to the show that if you hadn't been watching all season, you wouldn't know what the heck was going on.
Yeah.
So I felt like, oh, that's really good payoff. Now we have this. It felt like every planet that they went to for a reason. Everything was leading to this point.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh, it's great. What do you guys think? Anybody?
Well, I thought that it was beautifully done. I thought that, you know, I can echo what everyone else is saying, that it really ratcheted up the tension, and it got to a point, you know, that was very exciting and all of that. And the only part that I kind of rolled my eyes about was, you know, the Doctor standing up and giving this big long speech to all the evil aliens. You know, in my mind, all I could think of was, and then they shot him and he was dead. A good villain really should have used that opportunity to just blow him to ashes. And,
but yeah, really you have to remember who was in that group. I mean, these aren't exactly the brightest
all the bad guys
villains.
Thought he was, and that's what villains do. Is mm-hmm. you know, talk.
Yeah, but you know, it made so much more sense to just kill him, because then you don't have to worry that he's ever going to get out of the box. You know, he's just dead.
Well, here, my explanation for it is all these.
So, you know, you can't do that.
Okay. My explanation for it is all these villains are so used to monologuing anyway. They just think, okay, it's the Doctor's turn. Let him go.
I thought that Rory coming back as a Centurion was so freaking bizarre.
I loved it. I loved it.
It was great, but I had that same moment like the Doctor did, like when he shows up and he's talking to him, he pauses and he comes back and he pokes him in the chest. Why are you here? That was a really good, like, I was really confused for the whole, I was like, how is he back? What's going on?
I was confused, but at the same time I was like, okay, this is going to get explained somehow before this episode ends.
Yeah, but I couldn't figure out how they were going to explain that. I was like, they're bringing people back from the dead now. Like, what the heck? And you're right, their explanation was actually pretty good.
Yeah.
But I, at the time, I was like, how the heck are they going to get out of this? And then the cliffhanger, of course, I will prejudice myself a little bit for the later discussion. There was much cheering on my end when Amy got shot.
Oh,
I was like, yes!
I wasn't too upset about
that.
We're
gonna go here, aren't we?
Well, yes. Not yet.
Not yet. But
hold for a second. Hold all the that first a moment. But I did cheer. And there was much celebration, and I had a nice sigh of relief or whatever.
Look, you're not alone in that.
And there was much rejoicing.
Right.
Yay.
Yeah.
But I thought that the cliffhanger was really good.
Yeah.
I did think, are they really going to leave her dead, though? I wasn't sure.
I never thought for a second.
Yeah.
I hoped.
Not when they just brought Rory back and you know,
when she dies at the end of the second to last episode, you know she's coming back in the last episode.
Yeah.
Well, especially because the whole thing circled around her and how important she was, you know, how vital she was to do what was going to happen. So you knew she couldn't die before the last episode.
But it was great because in the second part, we might as well jump to the second part now.
Oh, okay, go.
In the second part, when the box finally opens and she's in there, you're like, what?
I love that.
That was great. I was like, what? Wait a minute.
I have to say, though, when she gets to her house as a kid and there's like a shadow by her door, I was like, that looks like the Doctor. Like, I recognized just his shadow.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, she's in the Pandorica. Little Amy is at home. Why is he running around? What's with the broom? You're like,
right. What's the thing on his head?
Why is he wearing a fez?
Yeah, exactly.
Fezzes are cool. Yeah, that's why.
Because fezzes are cool.
Fezzes are cool.
I was hoping for a better explanation. Damn it.
He's a doctor. He doesn't need a better explanation.
What do you got?
Bow tie, I'll give him. Fez, not so much.
What do you guys think about Big Bang? Somebody
loved it.
Well, you know, I have to say at this point that this was kind of typically Moffat for me, in that he starts out really well and he builds up this, you know, this penultimate episode which really ratchets up the tension and gets things going, and then ultimately he kind of disappoints me by the ending. It's just kind of a letdown, and it's predictable, and in fact it's even precious. But by the time it got to the ending, I was rolling my eyes so much that I was getting dizzy. It really was just too much, and that's kind of a pitfall that he has that I've noticed, where he really does well for a while and comes up with these great ideas and really knows how to make things feel exciting for a while, and then when he resolves it, you're just kind of left feeling like that's it. And I was just very disappointed by the way it resolved. It just seemed, you know, just cliched and very cutesy, and I just didn't care for it at all.
So wait, do you mean, Allison, like Moffat, like just working on Doctor Who in general? These are the problems.
I think Moffat actually does this not just with Doctor Who, although it's become something, you know, that he does a lot on Doctor Who, but I've seen him do it with other projects too, where he gets you really, really interested and draws you in, and then he gives you a resolution which just doesn't really live up to everything that's come before it. And that's kind of a problem that he has, I see, as a writer.
I can't, you know, it's weird, though. I mean, I see what you're saying about his season, but, I mean, in my mind, and this is, obviously, this will be for further discussion for the thing in general. I mean, I think it still made the best Doctor Who episode of all time. Well, of the new decade, okay, because I haven't watched the old Doctor Who. Because didn't he do Blink? That's him, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, see, I'm one of those who think
Blink is a bad ending. I don't think the ending's lame at the end of that.
No, I don't. But I think, wasn't Blink based on a short story that he did for something else entirely? So it kind of was like a total concept, and he just kind of stuck Doctor Who.
Oh, and he made it Doctor Who. But I really, okay. Well, it's a great concept. I mean,
oh, it is. But, you know, I mean, although I have to say that I'm one of those who, while I like Blink, I don't think it's the best episode they've ever done. I'm not. I guess because it didn't scare me, and that's the main thing that Blink has to do. Yeah. If it presses the right buttons for you, then it's like one of the best episodes of all time. It didn't press the right buttons for me, so I just thought it was a very good episode, a good solid episode, but I didn't see it as a classic.
I see, but I would. You know, although I would say, I would, going back to the actual finale, I would agree overall, though, with Allison, in the sense that I thought that is, what's part one called? What's that weird name?
Pandorica Opens.
I actually thought that was a better episode than the actual finale. So in that way, I would agree with Allison that I think that the buildup of part one was better than the resolve of part two. So yes, overall in that way, I would agree.
I mean, yeah, there were bits of part two I really liked. Oh, sorry.
Oh, Eddie, go ahead. You've been trying to talk for a minute.
Basically, I think my problem with part two, which I liked, but it was so stylistically different than part one. I mean, it was, you know, for something that's a two-parter, the story was completely different. Mm. And that was, that kind of took me out of it a little bit. Mm. I mean, it was all, you know, him and the Pandorica. It was a completely different thing, because in the first part you had all his enemies there, and, you know, putting him in the Pandorica. It kind of surprised me the direction the second part took.
Yeah.
Malcolm, do you have any thoughts?
On the second episode, not really.
You got nothing? What about the first episode? Give me something. I was just trying to bring you into the discussion.
I'm such a long-time fan. I just love seeing all the old guys come back. And I love to see that finally, for once, the Doctor Who villains got to put one over on the Doctor.
Sometimes some of those villains haven't appeared since the early 70s. That was cool.
Yeah,
it was cool. I also like that they made Rory into an Auton. Good back.
I wish they would have kept Rory and Auton, but that's the only thing. Auton, Rory was cool.
That's true.
Yeah.
I like the fact that he stood guard for, what, 1,000 years? No, it wasn't 1,000, but it was a long time.
It was like 2,000.
Oh, it was 2,000 years. Yeah. Right.
Mm-hmm.
It was. Yeah. I was really impressed by that. I was like, oh, he really does love
that
her.
That was great.
Although, you know, when he was, the last time that he saw him, you know, in the past, he told him just, you know, stay out of trouble and be really careful because you can melt and you can do this. And frankly, he's made out of plastic, and plastic doesn't weather 2,000 years very well. I was expecting him to look kind of like one of those dolls I find in my garage periodically.
Well, I saw that. It's special magical alien plastic.
Yeah, I thought I saw the plastic as like a generic term for like spacey, alien-y technology. I didn't think it was actual, like, human-made plastic, so...
Well, you know, alien manufacture, but nevertheless, you know, you figure he's going to show some wear and tear after 2,000 years and nobody able to repair him. And instead, you know, he looks like, you know, oh, he's just fine, you know, like he was just made yesterday. And that, I was expecting some sign that, wow, he really weathered 2,000 years for her and he took a hit. And he, either psychologically or physically, he doesn't seem to show any difference.
I think psychologically he probably should have, but I don't know if I needed him to physically look different. But I agree with you, psychologically, living 2,000 years just waiting for her should have weighed on him.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. That takes a toll.
Okay, anybody have any final comments about the finale? Or, well, actually, we didn't really talk about the finale. Not in its full... One thing I'm going to say in its full length, mm-hmm. River Song, my favorite, best addition to the show ever.
I love her. I love River.
Love River Song.
After this finale, I'm like, I'm ready for her to be a permanent companion now.
Thank you. And you know that it, at least we can speculate that at some point she is a companion for the Doctor for some indeterminate amount of time. But
at least
Brian,
thanks for grounding the conversation there, Brian.
She's really hot. What can I say?
But there's something about her character and the way she interacts with the Doctor that just is amazing to me. I love watching her. She is
probably the most equal to the Doctor of any companion since like Romana.
Yes.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Nice hit back. Mm-hmm. Callback, thank you. Mm-hmm. But I really, and then there was that moment when she thinks the Doctor's dead and she kills that guy, and I was like, nice ruthless streak. And I like the fact that she took his fez and blew it up with a gun.
That was great.
Thank you.
I only have one question. What is on your head?
Like. Yeah, because I'm like I said before, the bow tie, I'll give you that, Doctor, but not the fez.
That's an accessory too far.
And
one thing that bothered me about the finale is, okay, the Doctor basically sacrifices himself, sends the TARDIS into the sun, and it blows up and retracts history.
Restarts the universe.
Yeah, basically, he restarts the entire universe. So we're to assume, as far as we know, everything that we've seen up to Series 5 happened again. The only thing that's different is he doesn't go see Amy. No, actually, they took the Doctor out of the universe. Shouldn't the universe be blown up 10,000 times or something? That makes no sense.
Yeah.
But, okay, whatever.
And considering what we've seen, Earth should be a cinder.
So I'm like, all right, whatever. So he doesn't go visit little Amelia Pond when she's little, mm-hmm. and he shows up at her wedding because
she wished him into existence.
Right. What that's the,
which is what I'm talking about when I say precious.
Okay. The thing that bothered me about that is, technically speaking, she's the only one who can bring him back to existence and her remembering him.
Yeah.
Yet River Song obviously remembered him because she showed up at Amelia Pond's wedding and gave her the book. So I'm like, well, that makes no sense.
Yeah, none.
So it's like chicken or the egg.
I mean, River is so affected by the TARDIS that she somehow exists outside of time or something like that. But
I don't know.
That's always been a cop out to me anyway.
Bothered me.
Even then, it's a fan wank because they have not explicitly said that in the show. I mean, they may get around to it eventually, which would be nice. But I mean, because I'd even accept that as an explanation. What kills me is that there is no explanation.
Right.
The show isn't providing us any reason why she would remember and nobody else does.
Well, right. Hopefully they'll explain that, and hopefully it'll be a cool explanation once they finally get around to it.
I would hope this
is the one thing that I really did like about the finale, is that they left a lot of loose ends not tied up that we can explore deeper in the later seasons.
Well, I think I heard rumor. This is not a spoiler because I don't actually know any information. But I heard rumor that next season we'll have a lot more of River Song. Cool. I heard that too. So that will make having Amy.
Yeah.
I forgot her name. My mind erased her name from my brain.
You're gradually wishing her out of existence.
But that will, having River Song there will lessen the pain of having Amy around. But I have to say, though, I really like Rory.
I love Rory.
Yeah, I love Rory.
Yeah. I agree. I love him. Now, if we could just get him and, keep him and get rid of Amy, that would be
whole...
I'm the only person. I'm the total opposite. I hated Rory until his plastic transformation. Then I was okay with him. I really don't like Rory in general. I don't like Rory. I think he saved it for me at the end. Whereas Amy, and I know Olivia and I have discussed this, I love little girl Amy. I think the little girl Amy is fantastic.
I agree with you there. Little girl Amy is great.
The teen, the normal Amy, I go back and forth. Sometimes I see what you guys mean, and I do think she's kind of useless. But then there's other things about her that I kind of like. I kind of like her matter-of-factness of things. So I don't hate her as much as everybody else seems to.
Yeah.
She's a redhead. I gotta give her a pass.
I'm with you. Like, I'm gonna defend Amy too. I like her, but okay.
We're gonna get into the whole big Amy thing. Yeah. I was just mentioning that mainly because at the end of the episode, whereas there's that moment where it looks like the doctor is back, he shows up at the wedding, he dances at her wedding, he's gonna leave, and it looks like he's leaving without her, and I was like, okay, so the next season we get a new companion, it'll be fine. Mm-hmm. And then she's like, no, I'm coming along with my husband. And I was like, oh.
No. We all knew that was going to happen.
I didn't.
Come on.
Because actually, if you look at the last couple of seasons, the doctor has a companion for a year. They leave at the end of the season. He gets a new companion. That's been the pattern.
But
so
no,
that's
Russell T. Davis's pattern.
But so that's all I have to go on. So for me, it's a pattern. So
okay.
I really was kind of like, you know, it looks like she's had her year. She got married. She had her happy ending. Mm. She's going to go on with her life.
Well, has the doctor ever had, because you guys have seen the classics, has the doctor ever had newlyweds?
No. There have been companions that have gotten together, but then they leave.
Yeah.
And so that's what I thought was happening. I was like, okay.
Yeah, they get married.
They get married and they leave. Because his whole thing is, now you get on to the other part of your life. Mm-hmm. You have a good life. And he always stresses that. So I thought, you know, I think I was legitimate in assuming that once they got married and were trying to move on with their life, then that would be the next phase of their lives.
I knew that Amy was not the kind of person who would just let him go away like that.
I think it's got to be an interesting wrinkle to have newlyweds on the TARDIS.
Either that or with the Christmas episode, Amy and Rory come to their senses and are like, wait a minute, we could have a regular life. Let's go back.
Well, I think Rory would say that. I don't think Amy would.
If Rory might,
Yeah, and that actually goes to one of the things that bug me about Amy is that she just doesn't seem remotely as committed to Rory as
Rory she's
is
not.
Her.
No.
Oh, not in the slightest.
Yeah.
Well, no. I mean, there are times she almost kissed the doctor romantically at her own wedding.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that creeped me out. That really
Oh, totally.
Yeah, I think up until the finale, I never even thought Rory and Amy's relationship. I mean, they did have some moments there in the finale where you could actually see it, but up until that point, I never bought it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I think the doctor is the only one that really has that effect on her because, you know, she had that childhood crush on him, and I don't think she'd be attracted to anybody else. I don't think anybody else could woo her away, but she still has that thing for the doctor.
Yeah, but then if you've got that thing, why are you getting married to somebody else?
She was settling for a nurse because she didn't think she'd ever see the doctor again.
Right.
She does love Rory. She just has a special thing for the doctor.
She feels affection for Rory, but you know, it's like the affection you'd have for a really good friend, not someone who you are really
or
romantically
a puppy
attached to.
I think that was true before he died, and when he died, I think she realized how much he actually meant to her.
Maybe.
Well, you know, in that episode, I felt maybe that she had changed and maybe matured a little to that point, that she realized how important he really was to her. But then, you know, she backslides by the next episode, and that's the thing. They keep having to remind us that, oh yeah, she really is in love with Rory. She really is. See how in love she is? Look how in love she is. And then her actions right immediately after just belie that.
Mm. But he had been wiped out of existence after he died, so she didn't remember him anymore.
Well,
so that,
I could understand, but I mean, when he's actually present, when he's actually there, if they're not actively saying, look, she's in love with him, she's in love with him, she's in love with him, I just don't get that impression at all. Not from her actions or the things that she says.
I just don't think I forgot what the actor, but the actors that play Rory and Amelia, I just don't think they have that kind of chemistry.
They really don't.
So even though they might be saying it on paper, I just don't buy it. So I would agree.
Yeah.
Which is why, personally, when they killed Rory earlier in the season, I was pretty happy. I guess I was like Libya, where I was like, oh, thank God we got rid of that lame character.
I was so sad.
Well, so like for me, when they brought Rory back, I was like, oh, really, again? But I, like I said, actually, I do kind of like him at the end. So, but I don't necessarily buy their thing. Because, I mean, it's hard because the entire thing, we've known she's grown up being in love with the raggedy doctor, and she settled with the nurse guy. So I don't know how we're ever supposed to really buy them. Like, you know.
I don't think we are supposed to.
Well, I you know, we'll wait for the new seasons. And right now, unless anybody has any final comments about the finale, I wanted to open it up to the entire fifth series.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
All right. All right. So now I'd like to take it from broad strokes as far as looking at this series, the stories, the characters, what your impressions were. Because for all intents and purposes, it's you got a brand new doctor, a brand new companion, and a brand new TARDIS. So, and a brand new showrunner, so you got all
it's,
these
it's
different
brand new Doctor Who.
It's kind of brand new Doctor Who, though I refuse to call it Series 1.
Yeah, me too.
But I wanted to get you guys, let's go down the line, and everybody kind of give me your general impression, and then we can open it up to discussion so that everyone gets to talk. So, I want to start with Eddie.
I like the fifth season. I mean, I think their part of it is you could tell that they didn't have quite as much money as previous seasons. But one thing I liked about the fifth season, it was a little bit more old school than the Russell T. Davis stuff. Plus, as far as a season arc goes, I think the season arc was stronger. Russell T. Davis's tended to be, oh, well, we just put this little blurb in there and then we'll just pay off the blurb in the finale, where this one seemed to have more of a storyline that built throughout the season, and not only is it built throughout the season, but it'll also pay off dividends next season, and I think that is something that's new to it. But, you know, I think they scored a home run with the Doctor. I always have, every time I've been watching Doctor Who since I was a kid. So, I mean, every time they bring in a new Doctor, I think, oh, I'm not going to like them, but I've liked every single one they've ever done. So, I mean, they hit a home run there. You know, it's a little bit more old school in some respects, and I kind of like that too.
Any character things you want to talk about in general?
Well, you know, I kind of like Damie, but that's just because she's a redhead. But I'm sorry. It's just superficial. But hey, but no, River Song. I mean, you gotta love her. Some of the episodes were better than others. You know, the Daleks thing was like, okay, they're overdone, and they even look kind of worse, their new Daleks, than what they were. I love seeing the Silurians back. That's old school. That was good. So that was a good homage to us old Doctor Who fans. But I think there was a lot more. One thing I did like about Moffat is he tends to explain stuff, except for the end of the finale, but it seems like he will take the time to explain what is happening and give you try to come up with an explanation of why something happened, where Russell T. Davis was more like, okay, we're just gonna hit the reset button at the beginning. You know, I mean, yes, the whole redoing time was happened at the finale, but on an episode by episode basis, I think there was more time spent on explanation, and I really dig that. And you know, looking forward to what the payoff next season for what that voice was that we heard in the finale. There's a lot of speculation on that too. So it's kind of nice that they threw the teaser out for next season already in this season.
Okay. Malcolm?
I really like this this season. I'm already a huge Stephen Moffat fan. I mean, Coupling is my absolute favorite comedy series of all time. So I was really looking forward to this season. And pretty much whenever they change doctors, I'm kind of only really hoping that they don't break anything, like Tom Baker and Sylvester McCoy. You know, just don't break it. Make sure that it, you know, that you keep the normal stuff together. I was really impressed with Matt Smith. I really like him as a doctor. I didn't really expect to like him that much. He seemed too young, but he's a very, very good doctor. I have a thing for redheads too, so Amy was a go from Sylvester. And Rory, it took me a while to get to like him. I mean, because he kept letting the doctor walk all over him. So until he punched the doctor in his face, but for the most part, I really, really like this season.
All right. Peter?
Yeah, I pretty much what everyone has been saying. I guess I felt the only thing that hasn't been brought up yet was that I really was not fan of the the, was it a two or a three part finale with David Tennant? Was that two or
three? That was two
parts.
That was two parts.
It felt like 5 hours.
It just seemed like half the season.
Right. Yeah.
So that really soured me on Doctor Who, even though I really liked Doctor Who. So the premiere of season five, it just felt like such a breath of fresh air, and I really liked Matt Smith, and I liked Little Amy, and I liked, in that episode, I liked the Amy there. But then, you know, as the season went on, I would agree that I felt like Moffat's strengths was stuff like, you know, he brings the Weeping Angels back, and he's good with that kind of stuff. Like, I didn't mind the, what would become, like, the big series thing. I would agree that he really did seem to lead up to it a little more organically than what we've gotten with Russell T. Davies. However, he still brought the Daleks back, which I'm really sick. The iPod Daleks, which I think is what they called them. There were a lot of standalone episodes that just felt really weak, where I was just like, I don't really care about this. That wasn't really a problem. It wasn't really the performers. Like, I thought Matt Smith was good, and I was okay with, is her name Karen? Is that her name?
Yeah. Karen Gillan. Mm-hmm.
Karen, I was fine with her and stuff, but I would agree that a lot of the season, I started to get disappointed because it felt like it was kind of spinning its wheels. I was like, I'm not really going anywhere. But I will say overall, because of the bad taste that the last part of season four did for me, I am more kind of excited about Doctor Who again. Mm-hmm. And as much as I defend Amy, it's really more because of Matt Smith. I really like him. Yeah. I think he's very energetic and he's put his own, I don't know, he's really charming and everything. So I like to grade things, so it's probably like a B, you know. I think there are some parts that have been like B+, A-, but you know, it's probably like a B. It's probably like, it's good, you know, it's got some issues, but I'm willing to hope that, is this his first time as, because before it was Russell T. Davies, right? So this is his first time as the man in charge.
Showrunner, yes.
So I'm willing to give a few kinks, and you know, so I'm willing to go, okay, well, hopefully the second season will be even better.
Okay.
Yeah.
Allison?
Well, you know, I have to echo a couple of things in that, you know, I really, really liked Matt Smith. And I was not expecting to, you know, when I saw bits of him earlier, I thought, oh my God, he's 12. And it's like Dr. Babies, you know, and I thought, oh God, this is going to be terrible. And he turned out to be, for me, the best thing about the series. I think he just gets the character, and he's wonderful to watch. He does fascinating things with his hands and with his face. he really has this doctorness about him. He captures it. So I think, you know, he turned from one of the things that I was most dubious about to my favorite part of this series. Where the series itself is concerned, I think that there were good things about it, there were enjoyable things about it, but there were also a lot of weak episodes. A lot of episodes where I just went, ugh. The Dalek episode was just a disaster area, and it was something that from the previews looked like it was going to be great, and then they hand us these play school Daleks, and you know, which is obviously just product placement for kids, and the episode made no sense. And things like Vampires of Venice, which was also a disaster area. And, you know, you have...
That episode was terrible.
This. But, we've gotten a lot of that. And even things like, you know, the episode with the angels, which was a double episode. The first episode of that, the name of which is escaping me right now.
Time of Angels.
Time of Angels, yeah.
That was terrific. I really liked that. But again, you know, the resolution was it. It just kind of sat there and I went, that's it. And a lot of things about it, there were just huge logical holes in it. And it didn't come up to what the lead up had promised. Mm-hmm. And so I think that it was kind of a rough season. Yeah. As for the other characters, again, Amy is not my favorite. I think some of it has to do with the writing. She's, you know, they keep doing contradictory things about her emotional state. And also it's the actress herself. I think she's extremely limited as an actress. She has basically two expressions, pouting eyes open and pouting eyes closed.
Yummy.
And you know, that just gets really boring to watch.
No, it doesn't.
I can't get behind the fact that she's eye candy because she's not for me. So, you know, that I don't even have that advantage. I really like Rory, though. I think Rory's true. And, of course, River Song. She's awesome.
Okay. Brian?
Oh, you know
that? I'm going to go last.
Oh, okay. I liked the season a lot. I think the episode, I think the season was more about moments than it was about episodes. Like, even in weaker episodes, like the one with the floating space whale city, that was the second episode.
Yeah.
It wasn't a great episode, but there were moments where Matt Smith was just brilliant. Like, he was talking about, after this, you won't call me the doctor anymore, that kind of thing. The series just had some great moments, and it had some great episodes, like The Lodger. I don't know about you guys, but I loved
I really enjoyed that episode.
The one with the Dream Master I thought was great. The Angels
one.
The Angels one was the Angel one was pretty good, and the finale was all right. But I think it had great moments, and I was unsure about Matt Smith, and I was lucky enough to see the premiere at WonderCon with like about 1,000 other people at the same time. And when Matt Smith's name came on, no one clapped, because no one knew anything about him. But, like, I think within 5 or 10 minutes, we all were on board with him. We were all like, yeah, this guy gets it. This guy is a fantastic doctor. He gets what it's like to be, like, the doctor, all wibbly-wobbly, you know, timey-wimey. Yeah, he just got it, and we were all on board. He's the best, like, someone, I think it was you, Allison, he's the best thing about the season.
Yeah.
Totally. He just got the doctor. He was fantastic. He was just a joy to watch. Even in crap episodes like the Daleks or the vampires. Even in crap episodes, he was just a joy to watch. But the season also had some amazing episodes, like the one with Vincent Van Gogh.
That was really good.
That was absolutely amazing. And it totally caught me. I don't know about you guys, but it totally caught me off guard because I had no idea what to expect with that episode. And yeah, it was kind of a monster of the week type thing, but that was secondary to just the beauty of everything else in that episode.
And I'd like to add, by the way, that part of what works about that episode is Amy. Part of the key to that, the emotional arc, is actually not the doctor, it's really Amy. And actually, I thought she pulled it off.
That's true.
Look, I have to give you that she is at her least annoying in that episode.
I will give you that. Oh, and
that is a huge admission from Allison.
And I was never fully on board with Amy. I enjoyed her enough, but she kind of annoyed me. But I kind of liked Rory from the get-go because he was kind of irreverent. He was kind of like, he kind of reacted how I would in that situation. Like, he just got the aliens away and now he's calling them all back again? What the hell? You know, I would be like, I would be that guy. So I kind of identified from Rory from the get-go. So I always liked Rory. Okay.
All right. Well, I mean, I have to echo everything everybody else has said so far. Again, I was one of those people who, as soon as I saw the announcement for Matt Smith and saw his first interview, I was like, oh God, what the hell are they doing? Yeah. And basically spent like the next few months dreading the premiere. Like, this is going to be awful. This is going to be so bad. It's going to ruin Doctor Who for me. I just know it. And then the premiere episode came, and within 5 minutes, I was like, this is incredible.
Yeah.
And like I've said before, it took me probably about 3 episodes to finally get on board with David Tennant.
Yeah.
I was totally on board with Matt Smith, like, by the midway point of the first episode.
Yeah, totally.
So kudos to him, because, yes, Matt Smith is definitely the best part of this new season. As a whole, it was kind of uneven. There were some Monsters of the Week that I wasn't really too thrilled with. I mean, the Dalek episode, the Vampires episode, they were pretty lame. But like Brian said, every episode had a couple really good moments. And that's sort of what kept me coming back. Just like, there will be a scene where the Doctor will say something that just like hits you in just the right way.
Mm-hmm.
That just makes you go, hell yeah. I wanted to use stronger words, but I'm going to restrain myself.
Thank you.
But that's what keeps me coming back, is just like these little moments. And I'm gonna go on record and say that I really enjoyed the chemistry between the Doctor and Amy. Like, I think the two of them, okay, Karen Gillan's range may not be that grand, but when she and Matt Smith are on screen together, it just feels right. Like, there's something between them that just works for me.
I think what makes up, if I may interject for a second, I think what makes up for her lack of range is his immense range. Like,
yeah.
How awkward he acts around her when she's all flirty is just absolutely perfect.
Yeah, absolutely. And I feel like the two of them have really good on-screen chemistry. And that's probably why, like, I was never really able to buy that Amy really loved Rory.
No.
Because yeah, she just had... She had such better on-screen chemistry with Matt Smith than she did with the actor who played Rory.
Yeah.
And I love Rory. It took me a little while to, like, accept Rory, but when I did, I was, like, totally on board with him. And I think the most convinced I ever got that Amy genuinely had very strong feelings for Rory was in that Dream Master episode. The moment where Rory gets killed in the dream and Amy, like, really breaks down,
yeah,
and tells herself, okay, if he's not alive, then I don't want to be alive either. That was the only time that I really genuinely bought that she really cared for him in that way.
I could see that.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, I can agree.
And it is a shame that they weren't able to keep that kind of momentum going. But having said all of that, I still enjoy the entire season as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm totally, totally looking forward to River Song becoming a permanent companion. Like,
yes.
Matt Smith is my favorite part of this season. River Song is my second favorite part. And the two of them are really neck and neck.
I totally agree. Yeah. And those two awesome also, together. Those two also have great on-screen chemistry.
Oh, they're fantastic together. Yeah.
Especially since she started with Tennant.
Yeah.
And but she's carried that over with Smith, and the two of them are just fantastic together.
Oh, absolutely. And
I think Alex Kingston is a brilliant actress.
She's
wonderful. I think she could have chemistry with a block of wood, frankly.
Could I be that block of wood?
And what I really liked, I just loved how they expanded her character so much in this season, because in the previous season with Silence in the Library, I felt like her character was so much of an enigma that I sort of felt like we weren't really getting what was going on with her. And then when she sacrificed herself for him, I was kind of like, okay, so there's this whole history that we don't really know and at this point don't really care about.
Mm-hmm.
And then by this season, we see so much more of her that I'm like, okay, now I get it.
Yeah.
And that's what I really liked. And I liked them ratcheting her up. And I really liked how they ratcheted up the Weeping Angels. Like,
yeah, I agree.
Because when I saw Blink, I was terrified.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it was one of the few episodes that truly, literally scared me.
Pants-crappingly terrified. Absolutely.
And so when I saw that they were bringing them back, I was like, okay, how can you one-up Blink? And he was able to do it. Like
yeah, but he changed the rules for the angels completely, and that was one of the things that just annoyed me with it.
But, you know, I was okay with that because we didn't really know that much about the angels. We knew enough about them in Blink to get us through the episode, but we didn't have a whole encyclopedia page on the Weeping Angels, so there were so many other things.
Except, hold on.
I mean, the whole thing is that the way they kill people was pretty much explained to us in detail, you know, that's what they do.
Yeah.
And then that modus operandi was completely altered.
I agree.
And in fact, it was altered 5 minutes after it was explained to us again.
I have the same problem Allison did with the Weeping Angel episode, is because I felt like he felt the need to one-up the Blink, he then took away all their... I wasn't scared of them at all. Like, they basically, instead of don't blink, because if you blink, they'll get you, which is scary as all get up, and the scene with Amy in the little chamber where the angels coming through the TV, that was all great.
Yeah.
That was great. But then they changed the rules. They're like, oh, you have to keep your eyes closed now. I was like, well, that's not scary. You know, and it's just like, and then they do the thing where their angels are running away, and she's going through the field of angels, and they start moving and looking at her. And when we can actually see them move,
No longer scary. They totally just ripped. They just stripped the angel of everything that was scary.
Making them have that CG move was not as effective. That's true.
Yeah.
Well, you're right. Yeah.
Yeah, and I agree. The CG move version was not so great, but there was the Doctor Who Confidential episode of Blink, where they actually had actors dressed up as the Weeping Angels, because rather than create different statues for every single pose, they had people in costumes who would pose themselves.
I was very impressed with that, actually. The makeup jobs on them are absolutely
But like you said,
they had made different statues in different poses.
Yeah, but where I was going with that was, like, in The Confidential, they actually show a clip where there's a person in the costume and they start moving, and it creeped me out.
Yeah, but that's all fine and good, but my problem is you can't establish the rules for these scary angels. You establish those rules for the whole episode of Blink. They're scary as all get up. The first episode of Time of Angels, the rules are pretty much the same, except now, instead of sending you to the past and killing you to death in the past, they just kill you. They just reach up and strangle you, which is, like, nowhere near as scary.
Yeah.
No.
Like, my thing, I was like, really? They're just, and then all of a sudden now the angels have a voice. The voice was not creepy at all. By giving them a voice, they took away another layer of what made the angels creepy and scary. Because now they just sound like this little kid that's 20 years old that's in the army is like, doctor, I'm going to get you now. Like, no, man. Not scary at all.
Well, I mean, I still liked it. I still enjoyed it. Like, even with the rule changes and everything, I was still on board with it. And maybe it's because I was so on board with the Doctor and River that I was just willing to go with it. Mm. But that's how I feel.
And this is your time to say how you feel.
River and the Doctor, I mean, you know, we all said, you know, River's awesome. She really is. But I think one thing that surprised me how well it worked was, you know, the age differences between the two of them. You know, she's a lot older, he's a lot younger. I mean, I think one reason why they went with Karen is, you know, they wanted a younger companion to the Doctor. But just between Matt Smith and Alex Kingston, I mean, you know, you really saw them as equals. And, you know, I think that's just a credit to both of them as actors that you really could see them as contemporaries. You know, the physical age difference just didn't matter.
Yeah. Well, I think that goes to the way that Matt Smith plays the Doctor, which impresses me no end. He is young, but he doesn't play the Doctor young.
Exactly.
Yeah.
He really gives me this impression of this centuries-old character who's seen everything.
Much more so than either Eccleston or Tennant, really.
Exactly. And I think he gets away with that more because he actually is younger. It's an interesting dichotomy. I mean, I think, you know, if we saw him with an older companion first episode, it may not have worked out. But, yeah, he's definitely got his cred down as, you know, like you said, this old soul. And, you know, I mean, it just intrigued me.
I'm going to interrupt because it's my turn to talk now.
Okay.
and because I'm doing the podcast, I'm reserving my right to go last, and I'm going to go a little more negative than the group, mainly because most of the stuff you guys said I agree with. I think that Matt Smith has been one of the best doctors they've ever had, and he impressed me from day one. The very first episode, I was so excited. I was like, this season is gonna be fantastic. I mean, the Doctor was spot on. I mean, granted, I didn't like the bow tie, but
you didn't think it was cool.
I did not think the bow tie was cool. And I think Matt Smith can do almost everything that I expect the Doctor to do. The only problem I ever had with Matt Smith is when he's trying to do intimidating. Like, he can do funny, he can do smart, he can do old, he can do everything. But whenever I see him have a scene, especially that speech in the Pandorica, when he gets up on the rock and he's yelling at the aliens, he doesn't scare me.
He felt more to me like a glam rocker.
And then there's a moment he has in like The Hungry Earth, I think, where, you know, the kid is like, you know, who are you? Because I'm the Doctor. The monsters are afraid of me. And I'm like, nah, I don't really think they are. So there's something about him that's not quite as intimidating as I think the Doctor should be. But
other than, but most of, for the most part, I'd say 99% of the time, I'm totally fine with him. He works. He's funny. He's got this great charisma. I love watching him. And even though I'm about to go into some of my problems, the thing that keeps me watching the show is Matt Smith. Mm-hmm. Matt Smith has got me locked in. I'm definitely going to watch another season. I'm saying all my positives now so that I'm hoping you remember those, and I'll try to close with that too. But the negatives I have to go into, or else I feel like I'm not being fair, because I kind of feel like everybody, because it's a Doctor Who podcast, everybody feels like they have to say something good and be on the positive side, which I think, generally speaking, you should be constructive with your criticism. But since we've had like 7 people who have said nothing but glowing remarks, I'll go a little negative, which is...
Well, not nothing but glowing.
Yes.
We've got plenty of negative things to
but
say.
But I'm just going to say my problem is actually the overall season. The parts that most of you guys have said was really good with the whole crack in time has been, you know, he made it more of a thing. My problem is because he made it more of a thing, it needed to go somewhere. And I felt like through the entire 13 episodes, it didn't really go anywhere. It was like, oh, there's a crack, and there's another crack, and then there's another crack, and there's one more crack. And I'm like, well, if you're going to do that for 13 episodes from beginning to end, as the series goes on, you have to give us more. You have to tell us a little more about the crack as the series progresses. If you're going to make that such a big deal from episode 1, then from a storytelling point of view, that means that as we progress through the 13 episodes, we get more clues, more information, so that when we get to the finale, or we get to whatever, wherever he's going, that it all makes sense, it all comes together. But that's not what happened. All we got for 13 episodes was more cracks. We're like, oh, there's a crack, there's another crack. And then in the Angel episode, the angels all fell into the crack, and you're like, okay, well, what is it? The angels fell in the crack and were removed from existence. The doctor frickin' sticks his arm in the crack and he's fine. But the same light touches Rory, removes him from existence. Why is the doctor immune to the light from the crack? They don't explain it. We have no idea.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you can't do that. You cannot change the rules on something you haven't explained at all. Why are we supposed to be afraid? It was just, there were so many problems with the series arc for this season that I totally didn't care. Like, I was like, you're not, that is bad storytelling. And then you go to the individual episodes, and I would say my problem with this series is that Moffat, who is a new showrunner, I've seen this with other new showrunners where people are great writers. They're fantastic writers. And then they get the reins to be a showrunner and they fall flat on their face. And I feel like that's what happened to Moffat, where the episodes that he wrote were A's. Like he wrote the premiere. It was great. He wrote the first, the Weeping Angels, the first part at least was great. He wrote Pandorica. That was great. Mm-hmm. Like any episode that he wrote was an A.
Mm-hmm.
But a good showrunner takes scripts from his other writers and makes them good. He does a passover on them and he's like, all right, well, this is a little weak. We need to fill this out. You know, this is where we're going with the arc and let's bring this up and let's do. I didn't see his hand on any of the other episodes other than the ones he wrote. And that to me is a poor showrunner. I should see his presence in every episode.
I'm going to give him a little bit of a pass on that. Or just this being his rookie year,
but he's done other shows.
Yeah,
but this is a big show.
This is a big show. This is Doctor Who.
I'm agreeing. It is a big show, but wait. I'm sorry.
What's he done before?
Coupling
and Jekyll
and Jekyll,
yeah, and Jekyll. He just did Sherlock.
Yeah.
But
he's coupling the.
Thing is, I have to say about those shows, he wrote all those episodes himself. He wasn't in charge of other writers, and I think that's of the difference.
Yeah.
Well, Sherlock he co-wrote.
Yeah.
Right. But I mean, he basically was, I think that he's fine writing a show if he's doing all the writing, but a good showrunner needs to be able to lead other writers to where he needs them to go, and so far I haven't seen that. Well, and granted, you're right, it's his first season, but if you don't criticize him with it, then he's not going to get better. If you don't tell him, this is where you're messing up, and he thinks he's doing great, then he's not going to change. Mm-hmm. And I think overall that was a big weakness of this season. Mm-hmm. I'm not even going to go into Amy because everyone's heard my opinion of Amy. So that's said. I don't need to say it anymore. The standalone episodes, I've gone over the general idea, but mainly the standalone episodes. The only good standalone was Vincent Van Gogh. Mm-hmm. That episode almost brought me to tears.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
So I thought that was incredible. I like the premiere. I like Van Gogh. I like Time of Angels, and I like part one of the finale. That's four episodes out of 13.
Wow.
You don't like the one with the Dream Lord or the lion?
I hated that episode, mainly because there was no tension. The Dream Lord episode, he was like, this world here where Amy is pregnant, married to Rory, I knew from the beginning that wasn't real. There was absolutely no tension whatsoever for anything going on in that universe because I knew it wasn't real. So yeah. I didn't feel like, oh, is it? Because they present it as... Is that real? That world real? Or being on the TARDIS real? Which one is real? I was like, that world is obviously right not real. I'm not sure if the TARDIS is real, but I know that world isn't.
Yeah.
So I don't care what happens to anybody in that world. I don't care about, and I don't understand why they would either. Like, why would they believe that was real? And their explanation didn't work for me. The only surprise in that episode was that them being on the TARDIS wasn't real either.
Oh,
that
was, I saw that coming so early on.
Well, I actually didn't. So, okay. So that gave me a little bit of a surprise. So that didn't, you know. And the fact that the Dream Lord was actually the Doctor, though I figured that out when he was like, there's only one person that hates me that
much.
I love
that. That was the best thing about that episode.
And so I was like, oh, okay. So that was pretty decent, but... All the tension and everything that everybody was talking about, I was like, nah, it didn't work for me. Like, none of that worked. So, do you want
to... I gotta go.
Alright, so Brian's signing off from the podcast as I continue with my ramble.
Okay.
So, just say bye.
Bye, guys. Good talking to you. Have a wonderful day.
So, I basically thought that this was a good showcase for Matt Smith. I'm impressed with him as an actor. I'm impressed with the series... Well, when I say I'm impressed, what I mean is I'm impressed enough with Matt Smith and River Song to want to come back for the next season. But I have to say, from my perspective, the show has to get better. If it doesn't get better, then I don't know how much longer I can keep watching it. Because, I mean, I got brought in with the new Who, and I've gone back and watched some of the old stuff just from, filling in information standpoint. But I don't just watch it just to watch bad episodes. I watch it to be entertained. And if it's not entertaining, I found that it was the show was starting to become a chore and frustrating to me. And that's never a good sign. So I thought it ended pretty well, except for that freaking cop out at the end with the whole it was going like Pandorica and Big Bang was going really, really well. Mm-hmm. And then they got to the end and they did the cop out. And so it left me with a sour note at the very end for me. So just when I was like, oh, maybe it's going to get better, and almost. So I say for a season, Peter was giving it grades. And I would say almost like a C+, just based on the fact that there were 13 episodes and I could only name four that I thought were A's. The rest, say again?
Well, but I mean, I was just going to say, like, I mean, not every episode has to be an A for you, like,
season. No.
I mean.
That's true.
Okay.
I'd say four were A's, but then I count how many B's, and I'm only counting like maybe a couple of, I think that The Beast Below was probably a B. I'd say Hungry Earth was probably a B.
See,
and
I didn't like that at all.
I like part one.
I would give a D to that episode because it annoyed the hell out of me.
I thought the part one of the Hungry Earth was
like, so that was worse than the vampire one? To me, that was the worst one.
No,
yeah.
The vampire one was really bad.
Actually, right.
I wouldn't have given it a I wouldn't give it a D. That was pretty bad, though.
Yeah, I think the vampire one was like a D. I think the Dalek one was a D. And, well...
I'll tell you, I didn't really
I think
care
a
for
bunch the, of the other ones were C's.
I didn't care for The Beast Below that much.
I thought it was okay.
It was okay, but I felt like it was more of a concept piece. It was trying to set up a situation where the Doctor would have to make an impossible choice just so that we could see that side of the Doctor, which on the surface is okay, but as like an entire episode, I want a little bit more meat than that. Like, mm-hmm. What I will give it is I love Liz 10. I thought
she was great.
She was a great character, and I was glad to see her come back in the finale, even for just a little bit.
Because she rules.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I rule. Yeah. The only thing I have to say was that was my first time disliking the Doctor.
Yeah.
Because what I thought was he was upset that he had to make this impossible choice, so he takes it out on Amy. Like, yeah. He yells at her for, I thought, had nothing to do with her. And he made her feel, like, insignificant, and it would be different if she was an experienced companion, but this is her first time out. She's wearing her nightgown.
Yeah.
And this is before my Amy hatred. So mm-hmm. I actually was on her side of this argument, and I thought that he was ridiculously mean and cruel to her unnecessarily.
He was, and that's kind of what I liked about his character in that, because, like, that was him, like, really losing it, like, not able to keep his cool or even stay rational.
Right.
But my other problem with that episode was also just how Amy seemed to know so early on that if the Doctor knew the truth about this place, that it would drive him insane, so she tells herself not to say anything to him about it.
Which, of course, makes him mad.
Yeah. But I mean, my part is, like, she just met him, she barely knows him, and yet she knows him well enough right off the bat to know that this would destroy him. Like, that part I felt was not believable.
Oh, I thought you were giving her credit.
Just that one. Yeah.
I felt it was too much too soon on her part.
Well, they
actually what bugged me about this episode is what's bugged me about a lot of the episodes in the season. The way that the situation was resolved was via the power of love. Amy manages to come up with the solution to the problem because she realizes the whale just loves little children. So we have to show it some love right back. And everything will be okay. And there have been more episodes this season that ended with this fairy tale solution to what was going on, including the resolution of the season itself,
mm-hmm.
that, you know, it bugged me. And I know that Moffat said that this whole season was being done like a fairy tale, but does it have to be done like a fairy tale meant for 3-year-olds? You know, I mean,
Well,
it just annoyed me. It was that infantilization of the concept that just bugged me throughout.
Well, and also, like, if you want to get really technical about it, actual classic fairy tales don't usually have happy endings.
Yeah, I was like, they don't usually end well.
Yeah, they end pretty terribly.
Yeah, usually the children die, so.
Yes, they usually get eaten by something, yeah. Actually.
But, okay, so Beast Below, we're disagreement on the grade, but basically it's between a C and a B for most people. The Dalek episode, we all said, was pretty much a D.
That's a D, yeah.
I
thought it was like a C. I didn't hate it. I didn't love it, but I didn't hate it as much as you guys. I was just like, meh.
And then the vampires, was the vampire ones next?
I think the vampire one was next.
That's just, like, really bad.
Yeah.
So then that one I thought was anywhere between a D and a F. I hated that episode so much, mainly because it required everyone to be stupid.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. I'm like... Yeah. Why am I watching this show with the Doctor if he's stupid? The entire solution to the problem was him using his sonic.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That was like, dude, if you just open the door with a sonic screwdriver, we're done. We don't need we don't need Amy to sneak in.
Yeah, that's...
It was ridiculous. I was like, since when do they send somebody in to infiltrate so that they can open a door?
Yeah.
I mean, that's the whole point of having the sonic screwdriver. I was like, I don't understand. Why are we doing this? And it was ridiculously reckless. To send her in that dangerous situation, and it was dumb, and it was just like, I didn't buy any of it, and then at the end, she gets eaten by her children. Whatever, man.
Yeah.
Like, that was just, it was just awful.
Yeah, I agree. It was one of those episodes where if anyone had behaved with any level of intelligence at all, the whole episode would have been about 5 minutes long.
Right.
Right.
Angels, A. Part one, I thought was an A.
Yeah.
Part two, I thought was a B.
Yeah, I give part two a B.
Because I just thought the end... I liked the beginning of it, but then the end sort of didn't work. But I did like... I did like finding out more about River Song and her being in prison, and maybe she killed the doctor, maybe she didn't.
Yeah.
Like, you don't really know what the heck is going on with that, and I think all that's pretty interesting.
Yeah, that was intriguing. Yeah. And I also like just the one moment where Amy has her eyes closed and the doctor comes and talks to her, and I'm one of the few people who saw that and realized right away that this was not the same doctor.
I realized that too, because he's wearing different clothes.
Yeah.
So I was like, wait a minute. And his tone was totally different.
Right.
So like when he walks away from her, he's very much, okay, be here, do this, blah, blah, blah. But then he comes back 5 seconds later, he's wearing different clothes. I was like, where'd his jacket go?
Yeah.
And then he's talking to her really softly, like, you have to believe in me. And I was like, what's this got to do with whatever we're talking about?
Yeah, I was like, okay, this is either just Moffat had a stroke while writing, or this is dealing with something way in the future.
Right, and I thought that was cool. I did think that was cool, and I liked how it all fit in at the end. So that, like I said, that's why that episode is like BB minus to me.
But that part was a little too subtle, because that was supposed to be a callback to the cracks, and since that episode was the one where we really got a good look at what the cracks could do, that was too subtle to tie them both together. If that had been a stronger thing, if they had played that up more, then that would have emphasized going back to that this had something to do with the cracks.
Well, I disagree with that, because I felt that the cracks were obviously the main story arc. This doctor coming from the future at some point, coming back to talk to her, is part of the major story. So the two are clearly linked in some way. I got that. So.
Actually, one of the problems that I had with the season as a whole, I didn't address it earlier, and I meant to, is the lack of subtlety as far as the season arc was concerned. You know, the whole bit with the cracks, if you compare it to earlier arcs like Bad Wolf or The Missing Planets, those were introduced in such a subtle way that you probably didn't notice their first mention, and or even maybe their second. And it's only the accumulation of all these things through the season that you finally realize, wait a minute, these things may be tied together, and finally at the end they are. And with this, we got this crack in a wall. And it was like, ooh, crack in a wall. You knew from the beginning, especially when the villain from that episode, you know, the little snaky thing, turns to the doctor, and it's like, ha, we know what the crack in the wall is, and you don't. Ooh, you know, and you know this is going to be carried through the season. You know this is going to be the whole theme of what this particular season is going to be about. And furthermore, by the way the villain talks, you know that it's probably caused by the doctor. And everyone seems to understand that but him. So there, it was like this hammer over the head telling you, you know, okay, this is our theme. And I would have liked something more subtle.
I agree. That was my problem, because I was like, if you're going to hit us this hard with this storyline, then it has to be bigger than what you're telling us. It has to be something else. And like you said earlier,
it should resolve. By the end of the season, we should have the answers, instead of this cop-out of saying, well, we're going to let you know next season.
Well, it's not even that. You know what? I don't mind that. But my thing is, you got to give me something. Yeah. You don't have to give me the answer, but you have to give me something big enough to carry me into the next season.
Well, I'd like to have most of the answer. It's, you know, it goes back to Chekhov's description of how to write good drama. If you introduce a gun in Act 1, it better go off by Act 4.
Right. And I feel like, I agree with you, I feel like the gun is still sitting on the wall, you know, and I'm like, come on.
The cracks seem to be so loud, and the information that would lead you to what the cracks were all about, like this little piece that's coming from the future portion, that was too soft. That's what I was saying, where there was a discrepancy there.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. But I still think that those two things were not connected enough. And it's just, you know what? I can't even say if it's loud or soft, mainly because I still don't understand what the heck is going on. So because of that, I can't say, oh, that was too loud, that was too soft, if you have no idea what the picture looks like. Yeah. So that's my issue.
But I mean, you're right. Like, this is clearly part of a bigger story, whereas with Bad Wolf, we didn't really notice it in any real way until maybe halfway through the first season.
Right. And I thought that was great, because then you're like, oh, and especially I love the whole Harold Saxon stuff starts in like season two.
Yeah.
And it's on Torchwood. It's on season two. It's just little posters in the background.
Yeah.
And the thing that makes that fantastic is when you go back and watch, you're like, oh my God. You know, like it all.
It's the, that wonderful surprise of saying, oh my God, the clues were always there.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, the Saxon stuff, I'll grant you, but the Bad Wolf stuff was just, they were just putting a name there. I mean, which. It didn't really matter if it was like, there or not. It was just—it was just a name.
But here's my. And what was good was that the thing is, and this is what I'm saying about as far as resolving something and still having something for the following year. Bad Wolf, for all intents and purposes, was resolved by the end of that season, but the following season, Bad Wolf was still revisited. You know, in the episode Turn Left, we get a reintroduction of the Bad Wolf concept.
Yeah.
You know, well, in a different way. So they're still using it.
Yeah, they would bring up Bad Wolf like off and on throughout all the seasons leading up. Because like when the Doctor says goodbye to Rose in Doomsday, it's at Bad Wolf Bay.
Right.
Mm.
So it's like even in an alternate universe, it's still there.
What makes the Bad Wolf seem like it was so much better than the cracks is that the characters themselves didn't notice the Bad Wolf.
Right.
Yeah.
And since the characters noticed the cracks and they kept talking about it and talking about it and talking about it, that made it not seem as subtle as it could be.
Right. Well, and then if you're going to have your main characters talking about it, thinking about it, especially because he's the Doctor, I expect him to figure something out.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And we went a whole season and he didn't figure anything out. Like, not really. Other than he pulled out
really,
a piece
when,
of the
very
the
first
TARDIS.
Episode, when I'm saying to myself, well, he's clearly the cause, and the Doctor can't figure out that he's clearly the cause,
right.
I'm starting to think, how dim are you?
Right, and you're not supposed to think that. It lowers the character a little bit, so now we're on Hungry Earth.
Actually, Amy's Choice was next.
Yeah, Amy's Choice is next, the Dream Lord.
Oh, the Dream Lord, Amy's Choice. I personally gave that like a C-. That was me. I really didn't like it, but obviously you guys did.
Well,
I think a C. I mean, it just didn't do it for me.
Again, I felt Amy's Choice was more of a concept episode than an actual story episode. Like, it was there in the title. It was called Amy's Choice. This is all about Amy having to decide who she really loves, the Doctor or Rory.
Right.
Well, it was supposed to be character advancement.
But it wasn't. Yeah.
like,
okay, we get at the end, okay, she chose Rory, but then...
Not really.
Yeah. It felt like a cop-out, so I'm like, that's about a C-. There were a couple of nice moments in there. Like they had the whole, they were kind of zombies, so I always like zombie movies, so that's fine.
Yeah.
But, it wasn't really a particularly good episode. And then you go to The Hungry Earth, and I forgot what the second one was called.
Cold Blood.
Right. Yeah. That started off, like, when they were first drilling, they get to the Silurians, right. They get to them. And in part one with the little kid, I like the kid. I like the fact that the Doctor felt responsible for him and all this pressure that he's feeling on himself. All that stuff I thought was really good.
Mm-hmm.
But in the second episode, I think they totally lose it because the mother that kills the prisoner, I was like, really?
Yeah.
Like, that was just so... One, it was predictable. It was lame.
It was too forced.
Right. Yeah.
There was no real good legitimate reason for her to kill him.
It was a woman actually, but yes.
Yeah, for her to kill her. Yeah.
Right. And
it was an episode where all the bad guys were female.
Oh.
Got on my nerves after a while.
I didn't think about that, but...
Were they really?
Yeah,
they really were, and the men
sisters.
Were all saintly.
Oh,
okay. You look at the leader of the Silurians, and he's this wonderful, wise character, and yet the females are all the militarist, angry, violent, wants to kill everybody type characters.
Well, isn't that how things are in real life? Oh.
It's just a mirror to our own existence.
And I didn't particularly like the new Silurians over the old ones. I didn't like that they didn't have the third eye or kind of stuff.
And yeah, but you
they were
really
more like sea devils.
True, but you really can't bring the old Silurian look back. I mean, I don't mind having
the old Silurian look is so cheesy.
Exactly.
Really cheesy, big rubber monsters.
I just wish they never took off their mask. I liked them better with their mask on in the episode. Like, okay, I don't need to see human eyes and stuff like that. It just looked, it took away the concept. With the mask on, I think I liked the look.
I agree with that. They were more alien with the mask. They once they took the mask off, they just looked like, you know, humans in latex.
Right.
Exactly.
I just from a story standpoint, because I actually haven't seen the original Silurian episodes. I'm not sure what season that is.
It's
a Pertwee episode, yeah.
Oh, I like Pertwee.
Yeah, there was a Pertwee and a Davison episode.
Oh, yes. Cool. I thought I'd watched most of the Pertwee, but maybe I haven't.
It's one of the longer ones. I think it's like an 8-episode series.
Yeah. And it's early in its run, too.
Silurians, and there's a Sea Devils, and then there's a Davison one that he fights both of them.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, you guys tell me off book which ones, and I'll go watch them. But basically, I thought the first part was really interesting, but once they actually got the Silurian world, I was like, it just, everything felt cheesy. I didn't believe any of the humans. I didn't believe any of the Silurians. Mm-hmm. I didn't believe the whole peace conference that the Doctor sets up, because the people, like the Silurian guy, is obviously a government figure.
Right.
But the two humans that they have to talk, are, they have no power. They have they have no authority whatsoever to talk terms.
Yeah, to with speak the human, on behalf for of the humans. The humans.
I mean, really, no they sense. Could agree to anything. It's not going to be binding.
Yeah. I mean, the Doctor should have been smarter than that. He's like, okay, we're going to set up this big peace conference. Let's go get the Prime Minister and the
president. Yeah, because he totally could do that.
Yeah.
Especially since he's tried to do it before in all the past.
Well, yeah.
Past incarnations and failed.
Yeah, but I mean, they've given us the impression that he has a good relationship with these figureheads, and I don't even know why he would waste anybody's time and have Amy and the other woman, who, by the way, I liked her as a better companion than Amy, again. But I didn't understand why he would even have them wasting their time, and I felt like he was wasting my time by making me watch this. So it was just that second episode just fell flat. It was Amy with the gun, and then she had a gun, and then she got disarmed, and she had a gun again. I was like, she is such a freaking useless. I swear to God, she gets captured. I have to give her credit for getting herself uncaptured, but then she immediately got captured again, and I was like, all right, I'm through with you. Companions at least should be able to save the Doctor from being captured a couple of times, you know?
Yeah.
Be able to be useful. And I just feel like Amy, the only time that Amy saves the day is in those fairy tale things where she uses her mind to remember something or, you know, stuff like that. And it's just like, it feels cheesy versus actually doing the running that they normally do, run for your life and come up with something to save them, hit somebody, you know, something. And she just doesn't have it. Like, whatever.
Well, if Amy did all that stuff, then River wouldn't have anything to do.
But that's why I love River, because she does, she's useful. She's a useful companion. She has knowledge. She knows what to do in a crisis. She doesn't panic. She's just like, that's a good companion. And Amy just hasn't been, in my book, a good companion. And for the current new Doctor Who, they've done a good job going out of their way to show that every companion that the Doctor has picked has been capable. Like, they are very useful. And what's funny to me is I have a sister who is 16. And she called me one day and was like, I'm watching this show, this Doctor Who show. I think you like it, right? And so she started watching it, but she's been watching it out of order because she's been watching it on the BBC, and they play it in whatever order they want.
Yeah,
they
play
it
randomly,
And so she's been watching the 9th Doctor, the 10th Doctor, and the 11th Doctor simultaneously.
Oh, good God.
Which is bizarre to listen to her talk. So now she's had a sampling of all the Doctors. So I was like, all right, so tell me, what do you think? And she's like, I love Tennant. She was just like, I love Tennant. And she's like, she likes Matt Smith, but she's like, I hate Amy beyond the telling of it. And I was like, why do you hate Amy? I was like, you have to tell me so that I can enunciate my feelings. And she was like, I can't tell you. She's just useless. She's the most useless companion. She really likes Rose. She really likes Martha, but I don't think she's seen much of
Donna.
Donna. I don't think she's seen Donna yet.
She needs to see more Donna. Donna is far and away the best.
I love Donna. I'm not going to argue with you on that, but It's just she's been watching them so out of order and so random. I just thought that she would be an interesting opinion, just because she's been spot checking. She's only seen one episode with Jack Harkness, and I was like, are you kidding me?
And she is missing out.
And watch it was like Last of the Time Lords or something.
I don't think so. I think she saw an episode with Jack and the Ninth Doctor. I've been telling her nuts. She was like, you've been fangirling all about Jack Harkness. And I was like, yes, I have.
You should watch some of the black and white Doctor Who's and really mess her up. Yeah.
Well, they're not playing them on BBC America. And I gave her season 3 and 4, but then I realized I didn't give her the first two seasons. She's like, well, what happened to Rose? Where did Rose go? And I was like, oh, that was season 2.
Oh, whoops.
It's a long story.
So she's like, I'll figure it out. But so I think she's now going to get on board watching from season 3 and season 4 in order. And she's been watching season 5 on that. So okay. I just think it's just interesting to get that different opinion.
Yeah, all right. That's interesting. Okay.
Anybody else got any comments, closing thoughts?
I have one, and this is just my speculation. I'm just going to throw this out to you guys, see what All you right. think. At the end of season 5, there's an entity or something that takes over the TARDIS, and we only hear it say one line, "Silence will fall."
Right.
Does anybody else think that sounded a little bit like Davros?
That, I think, is the easy... You know, I thought it sounded like Davros. As far as anything they've shown in the new series, Davros is the only one that makes sense. But if you start going back to the old series, you get a couple other possibilities. So, Moffat, right, Black Guardian, could be the Valyar. Right.
Valyar would be awesome.
Yeah, that would be cool. Valyar would be very awesome.
That was actually one of the things that made the Dream episode kind of play better for me.
Thought
that maybe, you know, the Dream Lord was kind of a precursor to the Valyar.
I was thinking the same thing.
The 13th regeneration. So, yeah. You know, isn't it supposed to be
It's supposed to be the 13th. That's the Valyar, right?
Yeah.
Right.
So we're on 11, so.
Yeah, we're getting close. I would love if they actually did the Valyar on the 13th. That would be awesome.
That would be so great.
Yeah.
But you really have to like plant the seeds now and like start building and building and building to the point where when he goes to 13, he is the Valyar. Like
he's become disenchanted.
Right.
Exactly. I think they go there, and Moffat does have a lot of appreciation for the old series.
That's true.
He was a huge fan of it, and he does try to put more of those old series ideas into this show, for both good or bad. But I can see him, you know, revisiting that.
I have to give him credit with not only does he go back and look at the old, but he isn't afraid of creating new characters who can become classics. And I do salute him for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And say what you will about the Weeping Angels in this season, they're still classics at this point.
Yeah.
Just as far as like archetypal villains go.
All right. I think they're fantastic. Closing remarks from you guys. Anybody?
Sorry, when does the new season start?
Next spring.
Christmas episode and then spring.
Unless you don't count the Christmas episode.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah. Christmas episode and then in the spring.
Right.
So, closing remarks, Peter?
I listened probably for the last 15 minutes and pretty much agreed with what you guys were saying. I just don't, you know, like I said, I don't hate Amy as much as everybody else. But I think you guys are all pretty much on point. The only thing I would say is that I sometimes feel like as seasons get further away, like the Eccleston season and the seasons with Tennant, that I'm wondering if we were doing TV Campfire podcast then, I guess I wonder if me and Allison and Brian and the rest of us would be also having the same like criticism, because I actually have a lot of problems with a lot of seasons with, even though I really like David Tennant, I don't necessarily know if I think those were all super great. So when we're talking about this scene, this season, and being like, you know, it's okay, it's a B or a C, and I only thought 5 were an A. If I was looking at, I'd have to see the list in front of me, but if I was seeing the 4th season, the one with Tennant, and even though I love Donna, I think Donna's fantastic, I don't know how many of those episodes I would give an A to. So I'm wondering if my,
it might not necessarily just be Moffat. It might just be, you know, maybe Doctor Who is kind of a sporadic season type of show.
I think it has been.
I don't think it has to be, though.
I think this season has especially been more sporadic than usual. I could always tell you the pattern with Russell T. Davies was the beginning of the season was always good. The first couple episodes were pretty good, and then the first two-parter was always bad, and without fail.
It's like a tradition.
Yeah, it was a tradition. Without fail, the first two-parter was bad. And then you would slowly ramp up to the second half of the season would all be pretty good. So it was like they would get the bad episodes out of the way early. Like it would have a strong start, then mediocre, bad two-parter, and then it would start to ramp up. And it was that same pattern for almost every season.
Yeah.
And
don't forget that the two-parters were always the callback ones, like the first, like the Cybermen one and the Dalek one.
Yeah, and to me, that's kind of what made them weaker, though, because the new concept of whatever the arc was for the season was all everything building up. Like the last few episodes would all build up to that, and they would all be really pretty good. There was a very specific pattern to it. I'd say that Moffat has broken that pattern in that his two-parter this season was actually really good. But then he didn't do the other part where it ramps up and builds up and feels very natural build to the finale. It didn't really do that. It was just kind of floundered there.
Didn't Russell T. Davies break it by making the finale of the entire Tenant run not really that good?
But the thing is the problem
actually,
was
he did that a couple of times. I think the nadir of the entire series.
Well, I disagree with that, but I'm going to address Peter's point, which is the specials are not really part of season four. The season four finale was with Davros, and that was really good.
Yeah, I love that.
The movies that they did, the little standalone movies.
Well, it's because it's the end of Tenant, so it's hard not to think of that as the end.
But it's not the same. And that's part of the problem of why The End of Time had a problem, was because it wasn't part of a series. They couldn't build up to it, and so it made less sense when you got to it. I'm not going to argue
that they just hit the reset button in the end of that episode.
Yeah, well, and I'm not going to argue with you and say that The End of Time was great, because it wasn't. Mm-hmm. Because I think I told you, I saw it first, and I was like, yeah, it's not really that good.
Well, that and the fact that they just padded the ending so much that I was like, oh, just regenerate already. I'm like, bring on Matt Smith, I'm over this now.
Really, seriously, when it gets to the point where you're looking at the screen and saying, just die already,
David Tennant.
Please die. You know, that's how it got for me. It was like this ridiculous melodrama of him just dying.
And he whined about it. I didn't like his whining, because my thing is the Doctor sacrifices his life to save the world, or save a person or whatever. That's what he does.
Yeah.
You know, and
like what
I've never seen him cry about having to regenerate ever.
Yeah.
Yeah,
like,
but suddenly he gets all emo about it. You know?
Yeah, well, I mean, that's always like, been the thing with Ten, is that
I
he's
usually
been very
don't,
emo.
I don't mind him being emo. I like his emotional. I like his angst. I like all that. My problem was I didn't believe he should cry about dying.
No, absolutely not. Because, I mean, this is the 11th time this has happened to him.
Yeah, so what's the big deal?
So, like, he shouldn't have been like, I don't want to go. I mean, like, I would have really liked it more if he had been like, okay, I'm ready.
Yeah, something.
Like, that would have been way, way stronger.
Right.
Yeah, in fact, I have to say, Peter Davidson, he was not my least favorite Doctor, but he wasn't my most favorite Doctor, but he really went out with class. He was one of those Doctors who, even though he hadn't been around that long, he went out heroically, and he totally accepted that this was the end. And it made him look so much more heroic.
Right.
You know? Because, yes, that's the Doctor. That's what he does.
Right, yeah. and that's why I kind of it felt out of character. So that was part of my problem.
Davidson, the one that follows Baker?
Yes,
and
Tom
Baker. And his real daughter is the Doctor's daughter?
Yeah.
Yes.
And
his daughter is the one dating David Tennant, yes.
It's so incestuous, it's ridiculous.
the actress that plays the Doctor's daughter in season, I don't forget, is that season four?
Four.
Is really in real life Tennant is dating her?
Yeah, he has been for the last couple of years. They've been together since that episode.
Yeah.
You.
nice one line comment. And
that's pretty much everybody's reaction.
And it's so weird because I feel the same way. I'm like, for some reason, I know they're not related, and I know that it's an acting point and they're actors. I get that. But it still feels incestuous.
It does.
Because it seems like that was the draw.
Isn't Dexter married to Jennifer Carpenter?
Who?
Yeah, Dexter. Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. But that doesn't ick me as much because I really feel like the reason she's dating David Tennant is because her father is the doctor. That's why it feels weird.
Yeah, this one feels more incestuous because we've got two doctors involved with this one.
Right.
Yeah.
Call me Double Daddy?
Ew! All right.
Last comments from Malcolm. Go ahead.
As usual, as long as everything is fine with the doctor. Oh, and has anybody looked into what the Christmas special is going to be about?
No, I try to avoid spoilers. I avoid spoilers. I don't like spoilers.
Well, I heard actually that they changed their mind as far as what the it was supposed to be one thing, and then they changed it to something else. So they're like part of the last line that he has in the series was supposed to tie in to the upcoming Christmas special, and they cut one of the words out or something like that because they changed their mind about what it was going to be.
Good. I like that Michael Gambon is going to be in it.
I don't know who that is.
Oh, I love him.
Dumbledore.
Right.
Oh.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
any last comments, Eddie?
Overall, I think the season was fair. I try to compare it, you know, it's hard to compare it to the Tennant stuff, but I think it compared okay with the Eccleston. I mean, as far as the highs and lows of the season, there's some things with the Ninth Doctor that some of the episodes I thought there was a little bit weak, even though it had a great, you know, finish. You know, Matt Smith does make the show for me, so, you know, I'll be very interested to see where it goes next season. Of course, you know, look forward to more River Song and, you know, to maybe find out exactly who she is. Good, bad, or indifferent.
I think I agree with you in comparing this season to season one because the reason I watched season one was because of Eccleston. I didn't watch, at the time, I didn't really like Rose that much. I didn't hate her. I thought she was just there, but I was watching it for Eccleston. I thought he was fantastic.
Yeah.
But
and you hated Tennant.
Yes, let's bring that back. But I was talking about season one. I was comparing it to season one, and I think it is a better comparison to season one.
Yeah,
I think it works better to compare because the highs and lows of season one were pretty much it had a lot of lows, but the Doctor carried it through. I agree with that comparison, Allison.
Well, you know, I think almost everything's been said at this point. The one thing I will say, as much as parts of the season disappointed me, I still found there's enough to get me to want to come back. I love Matt Smith as the Doctor. He's compelling to watch, and I want to see more of Riversong and how that arc plays out. And so I'm just hoping that they become a little more consistent. I mean, it's Doctor Who, so you know there's going to be certain loser episodes per year. You know, it just happens. But if the overall arc of the season is improved and they get a little less cute and kiddie-like, and please just forget the Daleks for one season. Can we have a season without the Daleks? That would be awesome.
What'd you say, Malcolm?
Nope.
Any you got lost?
I already did. Oh, okay.
Well then, let's close out and thank you guys for all coming out to do this roundtable. I really appreciate it.
Mm-hmm.
And if you guys out there have any comments where you agree or disagree with me vehemently or even slightly, send us feedback to tvcampfire@gmail.com. And I'll talk to you guys next week. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Woo!